is recorded on the 30th of June 2006. It's a podcast aboard the Tribal Warrior, which is a boat that takes you out into Sydney Harbour, and we'll find out what happens after we pay. And my name's Adam Morris, which I didn't mention before, but I should. Email address is awmorris@internet.on.net, and I'm here with my wife Diana and sister Margaret, who's here from the US. So we're just waiting for the boat to pull up and everything before we can pay. So there's no way we'll miss it now since we're on the gangplank.
Last week, yeah.
When do we pay?
You can pay on the boat.
Okay. Yeah. Good to see you.
Step in.
Oh, it's covered in.
Lower deck, which I'm sure all of you are, because it's a bit chilly. above yourselves, you'll see those orange life jackets.
Yeah.
In the unlikely event of an emergency, those life jackets, our crew will be there for several years and help you put those life jackets on. If you're in the upper deck, looking forward to the vessel, you'll see the orange life jackets are in those compartments. Now, if you go downstairs later on, if you want to, feel free to wander around as the crew, we turn the vessel around. You get some good panoramic views from up here. You can also see them down there, but it's supposed to be more warm and comfortable downstairs. The first point that we're going to talk about is this area right here, Circular Quay. And if you're from out of town, Circular Quay is one of the places if you want to see Sydney Harbour, you catch a train to Circular Quay, or a bus here. Most buses and trains come to this area. And this was once known as Sydney Cove, the whole town of Sydney Cove. It's still Sydney Cove in the water. For many thousands of years, our people called Sydney Cove Waran. And Waran means scars, the scars on the back. These scars were given during certain initiation. And this was one of the staged areas of a different, for certain men. For men as they were going through from being boys through to men. This was one of the areas which was used. Sydney Cove became the place where Europeans had set up, the settlers had established when the colonies first came to Australia in 1778. Okay, just to let you know, the toilets, if you're looking for the toilets, male and female toilets, if you're downstairs and you walk back towards those doors, you'll see a door and some steps which go further towards the back of the vessel. There are male and female toilets downstairs, and if you're looking for anything, water, coffee or tea, our crew are there to assist you. And we don't want you to just sit there and listen to us talk all day. We'd like you to yarn to us, as we say. To come and talk to us, get to know us on a personal level, because we don't want this to be just a trip for you. We want it to be an experience. and yet, as you can see, there's a tall building in the distance across there on our left-hand side. It's called Blue's Point. That angle from the point of this area under the bridge, right over there, is the deepest part of Sydney Harbour, which gets to up to 40 metres deep. During the early colony time, they found they moved our people around and established that there were particular properties, whether it be offices, buildings, or farms. And it was on that point they wondered why Aboriginal people kept coming back to that area. It wasn't until modern technology later on that they discovered, because of the depth there, all the different fish species were coming through, and in certain seasons you'd get certain fish running. If you know a little bit about fish, things like mullet, they run on certain times. So many of our people were following those cycles, and it wasn't the same people all the time. There were different clans from different, even as far as the mountains, or north, or south. But that point there was once called Karada. Karada means teeth. And it was also part of the ceremony, which connects it back to Circular Quay where we left. Karada, or Dawes Point, was called this for many thousands of years. If you want to know a little bit more about it, we can have a yarn and you can ask some questions as we get to the island. So as we get moving, let's stop the rolling for you guys. We're looking across to our right now, the famous Sydney Opera House. Now the Opera House is an interesting thing because as I turn side onto it, you'll see the steps of the Opera House and you'll see some trees back there. This once was an island. And this island was a ceremonial point for our people. It's a neutral area which was used. One of the interesting things about it is it was one of the largest bin deposits in Sydney Harbour, actually in Sydney. If we don't know what bins are, they're an archaeological term for, you know, that show pre-existence and people that have been there for before. So what it, how it showed evidence is there were fires and they dug that area up. They showed that there were
lots
of fish bones and fires. Our people used to use this area for the ceremonies. There were ceremonies held here, and they would eat food. And there were stories that were passed down about this particular area. If you look at it right now, the Sydney Opera House is still an area that's used for ceremony, and if people are watching the show there, they'll have a feed. It's pretty much used for the same things, but the new name comes about. This is called Bennelong Point. And Bennelong Point was named after a man of the Wongal Nation, one of the nations of, or the clans of Sydney Harbour, named Bennelong. This man and Colby, Colby means white crested eagle, Colby were captured and shackled up and put in on a hut on this particular island. While they were there, Colby became sick, and when he eventually died of smallpox, which is one of the diseases that came through, he was buried upon this area. Now Bennelong Point, which you know the Sydney Opera House is on, it's got the name of Jabulgali. And Jabulgali means white clay or white ochre. And these ochres, you'll see as our song men out there on the island today, who's painted up, will be using the ochre. In this area here in Sydney Harbour, if someone turned up at your doorsteps painted in ochre, in the white ochre, that means you had committed an offence and that you were in trouble. So Jabulgali is where the Opera House is. Just to tell you a little bit of information, that vessel which is on our right is the Tribal Warrior, which our company is named after. I brought that vessel there. We did the first Indigenous circumnavigation of Australian history.
Could you
Oh, no, it's fine. I thought you asked Margaret.
So it was on board that vessel there, Tribal Warrior. We did the first indigenous circumnavigation of Australian history. And that vessel there is the oldest timber working boat in the country. It's 108 years old this year. As we get a little bit closer to it, you'll see that there are carvings on there. Those carvings connect the whole coastline of Australia, even some peasant communities who came to the boat. As we did this circumnavigation, it was a journey of goodwill and it brought people from different places. And we hand over some goodwill papers and offer the boat to the community, hand it over to the elders of their community who would share it with their whole town, and also someone would burn their totem or their community name into that boat. So it's the only piece of material or artwork that connects the whole coastline and has input from every community on the coastline. Okay, now as we follow the Tribal Warrior, we're going into Farm Cove. Now the two bays we've just come from, one where you jumped on board, and two here, Farm Cove. Modern-day Australia was built on these two bays. When Captain Cook came in, he came in 1770. And he came into Botany Bay, Coronel. 1778, that's 18 years later, Governor Phillip, or Captain Phillip, came back with 11 ships called the First Fleet. And the First Fleet established, ended up coming out here and establishing it here after they had spent some time in Botany Bay. But they set this area up and called it Farm Cove, and putting farms in all around this area to try and grow seedlings and to try and feed basically many of the colony. They didn't have a great deal of success at that time because within the soil around here there was fairly high salt content and it didn't really help them with their crops. It was from this they chose to go up the river. And back towards us, past the bridge, there's an area up there called Parramatta. It was Cornrose Hill, was where they went to. Parramatta, derived from the word Parramatta, Parramatical. This was the place of the eels. And they found that to be more fertile and it worked better for the purposes which they were going out there for. But it was in this Farm Cove here, some very interesting stories that came out. And very sad stories for our people, because smallpox, or our people call it the Dalgal, smallpox had infected this Sydney basin, or Sydney Harbour area. And it's said that it decimated our people right down to less than one third of their total population. If you look over to the right, and basically before we do it, if we tell you that the area which starts at Darling Harbour, it goes through to Coogee and Bondi Beach, was the area that belonged to the Gadigal. That tribe, that clan, you would know as the Gadigal, which meant grass tree people. Their people were affected so much by the Galgal, smallpox, that it took them from a clan of over 300 plus down to 7 people. Detached many, well, almost all, every family within it. Around the shore here, the farms that were intact, we know that only a very small percentage of them did well, so they used those seedlings and took them upriver. Right behind us is the tank stream. Now the tank stream ran from Hyde Park, which some of you, if you're in town, will get to see. That was the fresh water, and that fresh water ran straight down to here, and also had a connection to a vein which went into Darling Harbour. Very shortly, I'm going to pull up, and if you want to take a photo, looking across to your left, you see the sort of iconic photo opportunity, which we sort of stop for everyone to then get that photo. And we say this every time we're out, if you want to take that photo, jump in the photo and make yourself be seen, because you can buy a postcard which has that same shot in the background. This area here, Farm Cove, was once known as Wagamagari, Wrong Man. Wagamagari means the Crow Headland.
Another language group. It also meant the place of plenty.
because in here there was mangroves and some of you know fishing and some of the crustaceans like shell foods that are around. Up on high tides and low tides you'll find that these are times to do the either fishing or you're actually getting some of the crustaceans there at lower tides, you get those. It was full of mangroves, and our people used to come in here on many occasions and get their food. But for a long time, they thought it was named after it was named the place of the dead, because during the time when the smallpox had hit the colony, that was actually the fringe. At the bottom of this bay was where the fringe area is, and on that fringe, many of the people who were sick with disease came towards the edges. And on those edges, they were scared to go right inside the colony, but they thought the medicines were within there. Because people were dying there, people asked what's the name of this place. People may be pointing at someone and saying, that's where the people died, but that was having this horrible mood. Somehow the confusion came. Waterloo Bay, if you're looking to the right, these are all our naval, it's one of the city's naval bases. And the main naval bases of New South Wales, I believe, one of those. Across to our right, where these vessels are, is Garden Island. Now, Garden Island was... you can come out there right now and have barbecue. You catch a ferry there and they have barbecues and picnics on that particular day because there's an historic naval museum. But it's actually, as many of the places around, like the Opera House, this is and was an island. And it was given the name Garden Island by Mrs. Macquarie because they had the colony's gardens over here. And within those gardens, Mrs. McCoy could look across from her chairs and straight and see what was happening over here. An interesting story about this area was Mrs. McCoy, Lieutenant Collins, and Dawes, who I mentioned earlier, were witness to a ceremony. They were actually invited to a ceremony, being the first Europeans ever to be invited that we know of, to a cultural ceremony. And the ceremony was to do with, it's interesting, it was how the introduced dog had affected the food chain, the kangaroo and the emu. This ceremony was called Bayuko. Bayuko was an area which was also neutral. If you find many of the islands were shared resources by all the different clans around here, they weren't any one particular mob's or people's territory. But there was a mutual respect on these. During the time of colonization, they were coming in and cutting what they called rushes, which were grass trees. They were cutting the grass trees and actually tying them into bunches so they could waterproof the roofs in their huts. And if you know grass trees, you may know them as well. People know them in Australia as black boys. They're the tree with like a fern which has a grass which is long and feathers away from it with one stick in the middle of it. The grass tree is, as I told you earlier, is the name of the clan, the grass tree people, the Gadigal people. Now, down in Rushcutters Bay, also an area which was full of mangroves, it was a shared area. It was the place that we had the first real conflict happen, and it happened over actually a canoe, over a bark canoe. Someone, one of the soldiers, one of the officers at the time, took a canoe from somewhere. It was there. In the end, it became an area of fairly bloody battle. But this area, there's an area in Sydney which is called Cobra. Now, Cobra is now south of Sydney right now, the modern day Cobra. But this is where the original Cobra was. Cobra means mud flat. And this is where it was placed. For thousands of years, that's what our people call Cobra. These days, Rushcutters Bay is where the CYC, or the Cruising Club of Australia, that is the base of the Sydney to Hobart government, which is more famous, I believe.
They also had smaller clans within that.
as we take the walk around the island with Troy and myself, we'll tell you some more stories about this island and some of the techniques, fishing and hunting around here. And a couple of other stories before we have the cultural performance.
Is it the big island we're on?
No, not real big. Not real big.
Thank you. many places have got different names. A lot of them, slow me down if I get too fast when I talk too. Aboriginal people didn't all have the same language. Many of our languages are different. For this area, the name of the Banksia, which is a botanical term. This tree here, this thing here was used for many different things. If you look at them, when they were close to that, when they were really yellow in the morning, there's a dew on it. It's really sweet. You could use that with fresh water and make a sweet drink out of it. But when they get hard and they get to this stage, use that for fire. So if you can imagine hardwood and the softwood together for fire, this here, because it's really good dry, you get some oxygen on it, heat, you know, heat and oxygen, basically those two things will give you flame. And once it's in there, because it's like it is, if you look at how it works, fires are lit really easily. Has anyone seen a fire made by two sticks? Basically what happens is the hardwood is the one at the bottom. Softwood is the one the opposite way. The hardwood is the one you'll use, softwood will be the one on the bottom, and at the bottom you put stuff like that, or stuff within this. You want to pass it around, it's really easy, you can break it off. And it just works like a powder. Sometimes animal feces was used also because of its, you know, it's flammable.
That's too soft. Oh, really? Yeah. Sorry, I did it wrong.
You wander on. Sorry, never think about
it. I'm sorry, I was going to let you should have let you.
Oh, it's okay.
When our people realised that they weren't going back, that they were staying and taking over the land, changing the direction that our people had our ceremonies and their family, their dreaming stories for their family. Those stories are connected to the whole part of the land. So instead of it just being you just walking along the street to a place where you go, it's connected your family and your totems and your stories. That was when some of these things took place. But they were taking surveillance, they were looking at where the colony was going, where the rowboats and the redcoats were moving to. Before we go, that'll be the Troy. Across in the distance is Manly. Now, Manly got its name. Have you ever heard of Manly? Anyone heard of Manly? Manly is a suburb straight across there, and there's some boats going into it, the ferries. Manly got its name because Governor Phillip, who was a captain, came up here on 1780. This direction, Circuit Key, to boast to Manly, to Middle Harbour. When they got in there, they saw many of the people were in because the red coats were in the guns. One of the people stood on the roof and he was singing out, water away, meant leave here. And they wrote in their books, in their journals, that it was very manly because he wasn't fearful of the guns. And every time they referred to it, they referred to where that Manly warriors were. And actually, Manly was Warringah. And now it's got the connection of Manly Warringah. That land and territory belonged to the current National Park. It's called Warringah National Park. It's really called Warringah for many thousands of years.
That the head, the open ocean is just there. Okay. This is all salt water in here. Water comes from this one. Fresh water comes in. But it's mostly salt water. Really clean water. We get all sorts of animals coming in here. We get sharks coming in here. Whales coming in. Fairy penguins. Seals. They all come in here. I saw a fairy penguin just here about 3 weeks ago.
Shine the concrete of it all.
Gather up, folks. So see these channels here in the rocks here where the water's flowing through. Does anybody have any idea what they might be used for? Exactly right. fapping fish.
See these rocks here? There's one right behind me, another one there in that channel.
There's one rolled out of the way up there. And what they do is they get, see all these oysters lying all over the place here? They grab an oyster, a few of them, break them open, chew that meat up, spit it into the water. Those fish come up these little channels, and as the tide went out, the fish would become trapped in there. So the little fish would get away, no problem. The bigger ones, the ones you want, would be trapped there.
Yeah,
somebody sat here one day and said, fish traps, that's a good idea. You know? So you've got the two rocks, and there you go.
Just a bit further on that choice, certain people working on cycles, a lot of our people will use in certain plants are, you know how the cycles work, certain plants are running, certain animals will come out. Like for my, well, the porcupine or the kidney crawler. Now we know when it's at its fattest, when a certain plant is in bloom. And when certain wattles are out, some species of mullet are running. And that's what people were doing. When they knew that the mullet were running, because the wattles were in bloom, they would get down and do what the choice is. They'd find ways of getting burly into them, into the pool, attracting the fish in there. Keep them in there and let them eat until the tide drops out. And that's just making the trap work. Then they're catching the fish after that with the hard
fish. Yeah, pull back and grab it.
Okay, well, why don't we tell you some more about that island across there, which is Shark Island. Shark Island, I'll tell you that, but Shark Island was once a quarantine area for animals. And they had a lot of the animals out there where they had rope on barges and pulled them out. When something was too affected, they'd kill them out there, slaughter them, let the blood run into the water. And that would attract all the sharks in. It was once called Bo'amit means the island, that was called the island. But it was given Shark Island by that particular name. Some say that it'd be up in the air looking down on that barrier, it actually takes the shape of a shark. Can you see that island straight across here?
Yeah.
On there, they still have some really good engravings and paintings that date back to 2,000 years. And we want to go,
right? Yep. You follow him or anything up the reef.
Huh? Across on your left is Point Piper. Point Piper's a very expensive property for anyone in the country. It averages around $12 million over there. And funny story is that little white building which is down the bottom looks like public housing. It was public housing for until the last few years. So that's public housing in Australia. People who can't afford rich properties. Yeah, well, they moved them not long after. This area is called Double Bay. It's a pretty expensive area. It was once called Yaranabi by our people. We've got a couple of straggling along, and we've got to go around this way. We'll give you a little bit of free time on the island once we finish the ceremony. And we'll come through if like this.
We've got one of them already.
Which?
The CDs that they're going to have
on there. Oh, yeah.
Creator. Now, she is a good snake, and it's not Satan, not the devil. But the rainbow serpent was the creator of the Australian landscape. She was so big that when she travelled over the land, she carved out mountains and valleys, rivers and creeks. In turn, this created flora and fauna. And man was moulded to look after everything that Yali Yali made. Yali, she went into the sky and she shred her skin. And her skin became the Milky Way. But on the east coast of Australia here, we have the Great Dividing Rain. And this is the linkage from all Aboriginal groups on the east coast. Because Yali Yali travelled up here linking all of the Aboriginal groups. From Cape York Peninsula to the Daintree, the oldest rainforest in the world today. Right down to New South Wales coast. So this is a welcoming song, Yali Yali. Yali Yali Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yali Yali Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yande, Yali Yali Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yali Yali Yande, eh, Yande, eh, Yande, ya. Facing inwards, okay? And we really want just a slight breeze. Too much wind like this, it can be unpredictable, okay, where it ends up. But we just want a small, consistent breeze. We're going to aim this into the wind, okay, and we plant it at a 45 degree angle or at 1 o'clock. Now, some people take big runoffs. You don't really need to take a big runoff. It's not a plane. It's just a boomerang. We're just going to throw it at that angle. You do have to throw it at that angle, okay, so the wind can come and catch it, and hopefully it will return to you. A really, really good throw will return back to me and will hover. A perfect throw will hover above the point of release. Will come back and hover above, and if you're good enough, you can catch it. I've never seen it. I can just tell you about it, all right? Okay, so language name for this is Kali and Wangao. Didgeridoo. Is that an Aboriginal word? No way. Okay. It's an English word. Comes from an Englishman for the first time up in Northern Territory. Came across a group of Aboriginal people playing it. And what he heard coming from it was a rhythm. Something like this here. Today you can find that word in the Oxford English Dictionary under the name onomatopoeia. It means it's named after what it sounds like. But where this instrument was discovered, it was in Arnhem Land. It was the Yolngu people that discovered the didgeridoo. They gave it the name Yidiki or Yidaki. Or Yidaki. Okay, and from there in Arnhem Land it traded. And west of Northern Australia. People down south here, they don't use a didgeridoo, they use possum skin drums, etc., and boomerangs, and clapsticks, and stomping with the feet. Okay, so it traded east and west of Northern Australia, and so we have our own traditional names for it. Where I come from in Queensland, we call this Yiggy Yiggy. Can you say Yiggy Yiggy?
Yiggy Yiggy.
Yiggy Yiggy. Yiggy, yiggy. And if you move a little bit north, west of Arnhem Land, you come to Lurita country, they call it Gurumuragambak. Can you say that?
Gurumuragambak.
Okay. And there's many, many different names. Indaki, okay, it just goes on and on. But didgeridoo is an English term for it, okay, and the most common term for it, alright? Anybody here ever play the didgeridoo? Great, we're going to get you guys up soon. Okay, now, very difficult instrument to play. That's why I have a lot of trouble with it. There's four things you got to do at the same time. The first is to just get that general drone sound. We have to vibrate our lips. Let's all try this. All right, so vibrate your lips as such, put it into the mouthpiece. Well, hopefully, you're going to get a sound something like this. Alright, so you're going to run out of breath eventually then. So we have to learn circular breathing. I want everyone to try this. Let's vibrate our lips. Rhythm and beat. So when You're vibrating your lips and you're breathing through your nose. Your tongue is flicking up and down. Do you want to try that?
Discovered in Arnhem Land.
Well,
yeah,
is a peaceful colour, yellow is a ceremonial colour, and red is a warfare or law colour, which we call Tukurpa. Okay? Now, the story I have on my body here of the ochre is cyclone, where I come from. We're monsoonal. We have cyclones all year round. Okay? And it's very much a part of our lives. So we paint this story on our bodies. The nose is our tribe, is our totem, sorry, Nuruku, the frog and owl, okay? And this is represents Nuruku here. Cockatoo feathers are also just to decorate ourselves, and we also use shells, etc., other things from that area. Now, we've never ever wore this material, never ever wore this red material. What we would do is grow our hair every time. Very, very long, trim them with the salt water, turn them into dreads, and we would wear them down the front, and that's about it. Okay? That's all we'd wear, but I'm not going to do that for you today. I'm actually going to wear this, okay, but that's what our people once wore, and this was actually put on us by the missionaries, and it's very strange they chose the colour red to put on us. And today our people wear this whenever we have ceremonies. We've had them for so long now, we give them traditional names. We call them Nagan, Jaratja, or Gumbies. Now this is a Kulaman, and really, this is, as you can see, this is the bulb of a tree. Okay, it's actually cut from the tree, and it's a woman's basket. It could be for drinking water, to eat food, collect food, okay? But in this case, we're crushing up the ochre. Here is the yellow clay. It's very, very, this is the yellow ochre that we use. It's stained to grow everything, okay? But it's very rich. And by adding water and fat, makes it nice and glossy for us, okay? But you can have a look at that later if you like. But this here, we call it Kulaman. And last of all, this is a vipra, or clapping stick, right? Just to keep rhythm and beat to our songs and dances. I'd like to just finish up now with the song.
And we hope that we're going up to Darwin in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Darwin nice and weather. Catherine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, a bit hot?
That's why we're doing it.
Yeah. Get away from this cold weather.
And as well to, you know, maybe yarn with some of you guys and learn a bit more.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's the place to go if you're in search of those types of things, yeah.
And you're not remembering that.
No, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's definitely, you'll enjoy it up there. You've been to Darwin before?
No, we haven't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, it's a nice place. It's the tropics. It's so hot. And we have beautiful water and reef, but there's crocodile sharks.
So you can't swim up there.
So you just got to sweat it out.
Yeah.
And the beautiful water just teases you. Although you can, if you know what you're doing with the water. Like our people, during April is the spawning of the barramundi. And where we come from, we have many creeks that come out of the ocean that turn up into an estuary, salt. Into fresh.
Yeah.
And that's perfect for them. They love, crocodiles love that. And the barramundi each April will go up to spawn in the fresh water in the estuary. And the crocs follow them because that's their favourite food. Wherever there's barramundi, there's bound to be a crocodile around. And so we go up swimming into the freshwater creeks and we're not sure if there's crocodiles in there. We have a certain bush up there that they put the leaf in the water. Now, if the water's warm,
we're on our way back,
the leaf will sink. If it's cold, the leaf will smoke. Now, if the water's warm enough for the leaf to sink, there's crocs in the water because that's the right temperature. If the leaf floats, it's too cold for them. Way too cold, so we know we can go swimming.
You can actually book the island.
Okay, but it's not always that they're in there. It's just that it's the type of temperature of water that they prefer to be in. And they can actually make the water go to a certain temperature. It's really strange. So, pretty scary stuff.
Sorry?
Well, you know you can go swimming when it's a bit choppy, because being jellyfish, they don't like being thrown about in the water. So when it's dead calm, of course they like warm water, they like warm, and as soon as it's choppy...
Before the boys start playing some music,
if it's choppy, they won't be in there. You can go and have a swim. If it's dead calm, they'll definitely be there around the season of... around November, right through to April.
And, this was once a
time. And they're starting to change now. It's a normal common jellyfish that we used to get stung by as children.
Actually,
we have the name of. Yeah. It's deadly now because they've evolved.
Oh, is that what happened?
The Itakanji. Yeah. So they've evolved into an
area where they add cannons to the bay, which is to its north, to the northern part of the
jellyfish now, and they weren't
pyramidic.
They weren't like then when they were children. They would actually swim with the irukandji and get tiny little stings from them, like a sea lice bite. But now it's way too dark for the irukandji.
If there was any sign of trouble, they would fire guns upon them. And those guns were off Port Denison, cured them in the Opera House area.
I just put my shoes on, right?
Osman Point.
We haven't paid quite yet, I don't think, have we?
What's
have
up? No.
No.
An interesting story about Port Denison before we get in. What I'm using the Opera House. Is that?
So who do we pay?
He's going to come back with the book. The sign is out.
Prisoners in out there.
Okay, so just to let people know that I did do some extensive editing in the podcast. Basically, there was a lot of time when we were walking around on the island, etc., and since it was windy, I edited that time out so that people weren't just listening to nothing. And what I meant to say at the beginning of the podcast was it was the 29th of June 2007, not 29th of June 2006. I realised my email address may not have come out
very clearly on the podcast. So it's A.W. Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, at internode, I-N-T-E-R-N-O-D-E, .on.net. And I hope you guys have enjoyed the podcast.